want to thank whoever it is who is the anonymous donor, the Winchell's Donuts over there, for helping us to start our day. Thanks also to Representative Bellamy for having the lounge available. We have some treats up here. Anybody, Representative Dix? Okay. I sort of feed them out as we make progress on the bill.
Are you the treat for the day?
We have a couple other devices up here to help expedite our work today. If anybody gets out of line, so.
Bernie Agron's memorial tea.
Folks are reminded to save the floor speech for the floor, and I hope we can complete our work today as our leadership has so directed us. I believe when we adjourned yesterday, we had just about completed our review of the provisions of 324 and as amended. And I believe we were hoping to hear, I think, from the insurance commissioner on 324 as well as the insurance provisions of 323. And I'd like to go ahead and proceed with that testimony at this time and permit questions, of course, as they arise. Welcome. Thank you.
It's great to see you here on a Saturday morning.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Just what you want. More than you can say.
The industry gave you the the donuts.
I wouldn't be able to do that when I get my new job in his apartment.
I just told him to direct him over here from my office. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think that I don't know how you want to proceed that with 323, which or 324.
327, I thought.
Four. And
324.
I want to get these together. It's really up to you. 324 might be the best starting place because we've basically had our review of that. That's the risk retention as the first several portions. I believe also the NAIC model for surplus lines carriers. We dealt with the OMA, the osteopath amendments, made some other changes there.
Last night, going back up, I thought, I don't know the answer to this. Maybe someone of you know the answer. It's interesting to me because the Risk Retention Act is going to pass the Senate in a Senate bill, and you are passing the identical bill in this bill. And I don't know what that does at the end of the session, that both houses or both chambers pass the identical version, but in two different vehicles, what the result of it is. And if, in fact, as an example, that it doesn't come back, it's not concurred in, and it's not in a conference committee report, and I don't know if you've got a Risk Retention Act or not, but I just thought that as a more of a theoretical question, and I don't know the answer to it.
I'm sure legislative council will be able to assist us. Representative Hanlon.
Don't we always have somebody at the end of the session? I mean, our council look over those things as to all bills that have come through this committee and reconcile them with other bills they know exist so that we have a cleanup bill if necessary to take care of those kinds of things and make sure that we've done it all correctly and legally.
The Risk Retention Act provision, let me just tell you, a part of this state's attempt to implement the Risk Retention Act that was passed by Congress in 1986. Congressman Wyden introduced that particular bill and was given quite a lot of attention. It is the ability for groups to basically form together to as an insurance group to be able to be to get into what we call a risk retention group, to be able to provide liability insurance for them. The model you have in here is the model that is represented by the NAIC, the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. Just to let you know that the irony of this whole thing is the reason why Congress got involved in this is that the Risk Retention Act was passed to prohibit the states from basically attempting to regulate these particular entities by state-by-state basis, and in essence, what it comes down to is that if a risk retention group that is domiciled in Oregon meets our provisions in our law, they can do business any place in the country, and they basically are in compliance with that state's laws. And one of the issues, the big one, is the capitalization requirements. And a number of states have attempted to attract these organizations in farming in their particular state. And the way you do that is basically have a minimum or zero capitalization requirement. And I think it's Vermont that has done that. And that's why a number of them have moved into the Vermont area and domiciled there. And I think that there's actually some Oregon groups that I know have looked at domiciling in Vermont, and this is our attempt to get them to look at Oregon and stay here. The second part of it is the surplus lines bill, and we have, as I told you yesterday, been involved in drafting that particular provision, and to our knowledge, at least, that the industry, the people that are involved in it, though they may not like the Risk Retention Act concept, I don't think they're in disagreement with the way that we have proposed to implement that particular provision here in Oregon. The other sections of the bill, 324, in the back, you have a couple provisions that, to be very frank with you, I just wish I'd like to stay out of dealing with, and they're in section, I think, they're the last sections in the bill dealing with the controversy with the OMA and the membership requirement, and then there's another issue about, I think, fees. And I'd be willing to answer any questions you have of me of that, with this caveat. That issue is currently pending before me, and I don't want to get into a position where, if in fact someone thinks that I'm saying something that I shouldn't be saying. So I can tell you historically what I know, and I know Representative Hannon wants to know, but I'd rather not get too specific about it.
I believe Representative Hanlon did have a question. I'd like to recognize him first, and then Representative Phillips.
Mr. Commissioner, on section, what, page 44, the, as you described it, the OMA, I believe that's the section, Council, am I correct?
Yes.
The sub 5, lines 20 through the end, would permit the OMA to act as an insurance agent, the professional organization, fulfill some of the functions of an insurance agent for CNA, as I understand it. Are you familiar with the litigation in the EBI case?
No, I'm not. Can I go back one step, and I can just tell you that what our office, the position is, and then I would hope that that would be an explanation. I understand that in checking with my staff and looking back that prior commissioners, based upon a California case, which allowed the arrangement that currently exists they approved that, or the courts approved that in California, and prior Oregon commissioners have allowed the same type of procedure based upon that case now. And I guess that what I'm telling you is that the policy of the office, I understand, has been to allow the current arrangement. And that question has been challenged.
Follow up.
Representative Hanlon.
Mr. Commissioner, it's your office now, whatever the policy's been in the past. And my question relating to this section, and I expressed it earlier, was that I was a little nervous that we were approving something that fell into the category of illegal rebate in a practice that had occurred for years. And I'm looking for your assurance that in this bill we are not doing such a thing.
Well, Representative Hanlon, the reason that I am hesitant to answer is obviously that I wish I could tell you my own opinion, but obviously the Attorney General's office is the one that is going to have to answer that question. And to my knowledge, they have not answered that question specifically as you asked on the interpretation of the current Oregon law. And that is going to be part of the process, of the hearings process that we're going to be engaging in, I assume, shortly after this session, if in fact it's not resolved through legislative action.
Would that hearings process also take into account the not only taking over the agent's functions, but the between $200,000 and $300,000 that goes from CNA directly to the Oregon Medical Association for putting on educational seminars?
Yeah, I believe that the inquiry that has come to our office does cover the wide range. I've looked at the request, and I think it's broad enough to interpret it that way.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chair, as I hear the commissioner speak, he doesn't have any additions to 324. He's covered it fine. We conceptually approved it yesterday. I would move we set that aside and move on to the two drafts of 323, one dealing with tort and the other dealing with insurance.
Okay. Let me inquire just before we leave 324. Council, I understand that we may not have specifically stated the effective date for risk retention or for the measure overall, if they're to be the same. I guess we'd like to hear the commissioner's input on that. Mr. Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, if I could look at 323-108 series. And I just have started on page 8, line 28, and let me just talk to you about three issues that I'm concerned about.
Let me see if I can get your response to that question on 324 on the effective date. Council, could you point that out in the dash with 27
right.
amendments?
Right, in the dash 27 amendments, page 14, lines 14 and 15. Which applies to the Risk Retention Act. The effective date is blank. My memory was either in the original printed bill or in testimony, someone mentioned that there was an emergency clause. I don't have the original printed bill in front of me.
Yes, that is correct.
That it is blank?
It didn't have an emergency clause.
It did, in the original bill.
If I might, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
The reason was because we have a large number of applications for registration as both risk retention groups and purchasing groups currently at the commissioner's office, and we'd like to begin processing those.
So you would ask for an emergency clause as the effective date for those sections?
On those sections.
Mr. Chair, I so move.
Representative Bellamy moves that the effective date for the sections of 324 and the dash 27 amendments related to the Risk Retention Act I have an emergency clause. Any further discussion on that motion? Any objection? If not, it's adopted. Do we need to be considered or have any special consideration as to the other provisions of or other sections of 324?
Not from our perspective.
Okay. Anything else before we leave 324? Okay, if not, let's proceed with the insurance provisions of 323, and I think those can be found, Council, in which draft of amendments. If you could identify that, please, so we can turn to that in our books. I believe it begins with Section 32 of the CN draft bill. Representative Bond.
May I make a statement for the record as we start Senate Bill 323? Some of the positions that I will take on this bill are less in terms of what I desire to accomplish than I would like to see in the bill in a desire to create an effort for compromise that hopefully would allow the committee to come out with a unified report. If that's not possible and minority reports are developed, my position may be different than that I take in committee because of an attempt to take a compromise position in committee.
Okay, thank you. Council, why don't I let you sort of identify where we're at here in our workbooks, and that'll assist us, I think, in following the comments and responses of the commission.
For the full committee people who aren't familiar with the inner workings of the notebook, the first section in there is amendments to section 323. Behind it are the staff analysis to 323-108. Amendments are a rewrite of what was adopted by the subcommittee out of 323, the insurance provisions, and it needs a second amendment, which is 114, which is what I've been referring to as the cleanup amendment. So if you take 108 and 114, it creates a complete packet of what has been approved by the subcommittee for the insurance provisions of 323.
Okay, Mr. Commissioner, how would you like to proceed at this time? Was it your intent to sort of review it section by section?
No, I wasn't going to do that, and I was just going to move to the sections that I have a question about that I would rather do it that way, if that's okay with you.
That's fine by me. I just want to make sure every member, including those who didn't have a chance to work hands-on, has the opportunity to ask questions about each section.
I would be happy to answer the questions. I'd rather do it that way. If they have a specific question about it, I'd rather answer it that way.
Let's go ahead and ask the insurance commissioner to proceed then, focusing on those sections where you have a particular concern and responding to questions as it relates to other sections.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, the area that I would like to direct you to is section 48 of... it is,
excuse me,
let me get both versions together. If you look at 323-108, it starts on page 7, line 20. That is the original draft, and then you have the amendments, which are identified as SB 323-C-114. And the area that I want to, the sections I want to talk about on the 114 amendments start on page 3. Line 13, and you'll note that they both are entitled section 48. And the 114 amendments
are based... Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me. Representative Hanlon.
I just want to make sure the whole committee's following along. I do not have the 108 amendments.
I don't either.
I've got the 114, but not the 108.
Does anyone else not have them?
You're sure you're not in your book?
They could be in my book.
Okay, right? We'll just kind of...
I can talk about the 114 amendments. I think that's the one I'd like to talk to you about, because that actually is to be inserted into the 108 amendments, and it's this section that I want to talk to you about.
Okay, let's make sure. Has everyone got the 114 amendments?
114?
Okay, I'll assume that to be the case. Ms. McNichol, if you'd like to go ahead and proceed with your comments on 114, then you can find it.
I'd like to direct you to the amendments that are titled 114 on page 5, line 6. And what this section, sub 2, and it starts out, a hearing held pursuant to subsection 1 of this section, which is the hearing when a carrier files a rate request. I mean, and I, in fact, decide that it should go to hearing.
I'll listen to
page 3 to page 6.
Same here. I didn't go from page 3 to page 6.
Page 6 you want us to look at. I don't, we don't have. Get everything else.
You don't have page 4 and 5?
No, mine goes from page 3, I don't have 4 or 5.
There's no 4 or 5.
Maybe is it up here?
Somebody may have a 4 and 5 out there. Counselor, have you got, who are we assisting on what?
Take a break.
Okay, we're going to be in recess for 5 minutes, so everybody gets copies of 108 and 114.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Make sure we all have up-to-date and complete copies of the 108 and 114 amendments to which Commissioner Kulongoski is addressing his remarks. Appreciate your patience. It's 5 minutes till parade time in Portland. I'm also reminded this is D-Day, so we too could be a part of history by the time the day's over. Commissioner Kulongoski.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you. If you, I am now again looking at the amendments on to 114 on page 5. The first amendment that I have suggestion is on line 6. This section number 2 has to do with a hearing being conducted by the referee appointed by the commissioner, and sets the time that the referee shall report findings, conclusions, and recommendations to the commissioner within 30 days of the hearing. My only concern is that I think that what was intended, that there should be inserted afterward, before the word hearing, the phrase close of the hearing. And I just want to make sure that there is no argument that that the hearing, that the order had to be within 30 days that the hearing commenced, because the hearing may be quite lengthy. And I would suggest an amendment that says that it would read within 30 days of the close of the hearing. And the amended words are close of the. That's the first one I have.
Mr. Chairman, I so move.
That's on line 6 on page 5 of the dash 114 amendments. Is that correct? Are we all clear on the amendments? Representative Bellamy has moved them. Is there any objection? If not, consider adopted.
The next change I would suggest is on page 5 on line 9. It's the phrase just and legitimate cost of the hearing. It's a tricky argument. I do not, in my knowledge, have ever recalled in a determination of cost or attorney fees that just and legitimate is the standard, and I would like to use what is commonly used, and that's what I would substitute for just and legitimate, fair and reasonable, because I don't think it makes any difference other than there is case law defining fair and reasonable. I don't know of any that defines just and legitimate.
Chairman, I so move.
Okay, Representative Bellamy on line 9 of page 5 of the dash 114 amendments. Let's move the language suggested by the insurance commissioner, substituting fair and reasonable for just and legitimate. Any further discussion? Any objection? We're going to put that next to the gavel, so.
Mr. Chair, I just didn't want anybody to not accuse me of being fair and reasonable.
Spoken like a potential carrier of the committee report, Representative Bellamy.
The other amendment I'm going to talk to you about, it really isn't an amendment, it's a policy decision, and I'm yet unsure how it got in the bill or why. And it's on page 5, it's section 4, beginning on line 14 through 19. Lines 14 through 19. And the only reason I bring this up to you is that if I read that correctly, that is stating that the review under the APA is reviewed as an uncontested case. And my question to you is twofold. One, is it just the review that is treated as an uncontested case, but the hearing itself would be a contested case, and I have all the statutory notices and everything that are required of that? Or is it the intent of the committee that the original hearing is not a contested case? And I'm not sure in reading this of what the intent of the committee is.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
Ted, what is it you would like to have that do?
You know, if I could, the one side of me says I'd like an uncontested case because I think it's basically informal and, you know, things go on. But I also know that the purpose of this reform is to bring the public involved more into the rates and how they're made and things of that nature. So I think that probably what the intent of insurance reform is to do is to, it should be a contested case. And now there's a downside to that, as you well know, because all you, and I shouldn't say downside, there's another side to it. And I think that you have to look at PUC hearings and things of that nature and know that that's probably, if you go the contested case approach, that's basically the procedure that you're looking at. Now can I go back just to the review? If it in fact is just the intent to have the appeal or the review of the commissioner's order in that hearing subject to a non-contested procedure, the difference is under a contested case hearing, the decision of the commissioner is appealed to the Court of Appeals, as any other administrative decision is. If you use the uncontested approach, it is filed within 60 days, I think, after the order in the Marion County Circuit Court. And it goes that particular route. Now, you know, again, I guess if you're looking for guidance, I would suggest that the contested case approach is probably the more in line with what this committee had intended. I think. I see all these faces looking at me.
So I don't recall that there's been a lot of discussion on that issue previously, so if you're getting a few dropped jaws or blank stares, I can explain it. Representative Phillips?
Your suggestion then is that we would drop lines. What would happen if we dropped out that Section 4? Or should we rewrite Section 4?
I think that's probably what it should be.
I gave you two options, Ted. Change it or drop it.
No, I don't want to drop it. Okay. I think that in order, if I could suggest this to you, that I'm looking at page 5, line 4, where it says, and let me just read, it says, an order issued under subsection 3 of this section may be reviewed as provided in ORS at 183-480 to 183-550 for review of orders. And where you say other than contested cases, I would put in of contested cases. Now, the problem I have to tell you is that there is an elaborate statutory process in the beginning of the Administrative Procedures Act that basically states which agencies and everything, hearings are subject to a contested case. And I think that it takes a little more than me sitting up here looking at that. I think it probably takes staff counsel to see if this thing is all wound together in other sections that talk about contested cases.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bunn.
Ted, can we go back a little and you give us an idea of what, is this all rate filings we're talking about here? What are we talking about in this area?
We're talking of filings of commercial liability insurance rates for markets specified the commissioner shall be submitted by an insurer or rating organization to the commissioner for review prior to the effective date if the average annual rate level increase or decrease for each market exceeds 25%.
Okay, so we're talking about those cases in which we've triggered the 25% or more level. We're in that line of insurance.
Commercial liability.
There may be 600 carriers that are coming in with rate increase requests. I just want to see how the mechanics work. Those 600 come in. If in all 600 of their requests we went through the full procedure, what would we end up with?
600 cases.
Okay.
But I understand that, and that is a concern we have. And what would happen is that under the bill that I would have there's a 30-day waiting period. They have to file it 30 days at the earliest, 30 days prior to it going into effect. And then it says the 30-day waiting period may be extended to 60 days if the commissioner gives written notice within such waiting period to the insurer or rating organization